Good morning, everybody. Welcome to Bordier live call, which is most importantly covering the period for Q1 2018. Thank you for those of you who sent questions in. I'm joined today by Mark Robinson, Chief Investment Officer, and Tom Cairns, Investment Manager. We've got quite a lot to get through, so I'm just going to kick straight off. First question. Mark, the investment committee met end of December, but we also had another interim investment committee meeting last week. What's been dominating the conversation, the thinking in that group?
Yeah. Okay. Good morning, everyone. Well, certainly, it's been encouraging to see much better economic growth around, particularly the developed world. We're talking about economic growth now in the range of 2%, 2.5% for 2018, which is much more encouraging than it was. Only the U.K. is still chugging along at a much lower growth rate. And we can see this better picture economically in the PMI figures, the Purchasing Managers' Indices across the developed markets. Most of those are in expansion territory. If you look at the numbers, they're all well above 50, which is the pivot point between expansion and contraction. And some cases nudging 60, which is about as good as it ever gets. And that's, I think, we just need to be very mindful of that these PMIs can only really go in one direction now. This growth is taking its time to come through. It's really as a result of years of stimulus, the QE that we've had, and the liquidity is finally translating into this economic growth. So it's all fine, but clearly also confirms that we are much closer to peak cycle than we are at the start of the cycle. And this financial experiment that we have been going through and that has called all financial assets to rise collectively is now coming towards its end. So we really need to be pretty careful going forward. Clearly a lot of appetite for risk out there, lots of FOMO, fear of missing out. I've lost count of the conversations I had over Christmas of Bitcoin, people asking me about whether they should get involved in Bitcoin. And these are people that I would count as non-sophisticated investors or not investors at all, asking me how they get involved in Bitcoin. So a lot of fear of missing out and a lot of looking through the rearview mirror. Interestingly, Bitcoin, I think, since those conversations, has fallen from about $20,000 a coin to nearly $10,000 last night. So I hope none of them did get involved. But lots of looking through the rearview mirror, a little appetite for looking ahead. And hence, we have a situation now where financial markets, and that's both equities and bonds, have become very extended and complacency very high. So our current investment thinking, just to come back to the question, what's dominating things, our current investment thinking and positioning very much revolving around some of the good things that are around us now in terms of growth, but also the inevitable forthcoming response from policymakers that will probably make life quite difficult for investors. We need to remember that the financial markets are still enveloped by the distortions created by the last financial crisis. They haven't got here under their own steam. So now that that's being unwound, we need to be pretty careful, and that's really dominating our thoughts.
Okay. Obviously, we were about to publish the detailed findings to our introducers around the investment committee, and that's going to say right now that there's no change in terms of headline equity allocation. What is still causing the committee to continue to act with restraint, and what are the risks that they see out there?
Well, probably the main risk is policy error by the Federal Reserve and probably other central banks too, and that's probably the key risk that we have out there. We do have some inflation coming through. It's been sluggish, but I think nudged higher recently by certainly in the States by the prospect of these U.S. tax reforms and quite a significant jump in the oil price, and that probably hasn't been factored in yet to inflation expectations were fully factored in. We've had a jump of the oil price of about 50% since the summer, that has got to have some sort of impact on inflation. So although maybe three rises of US interest rates are baked into the cake, there is a risk that we have more aggressive tightening by the Fed, and also possibly a swifter removal of QE stimulus by the ECB. So these are risks. And some other risks clearly have, some risks have dissipated. I mean, European political risk probably has dissipated a little bit, but some other risks are still very much there. We've still got high levels of debt, whether that's at a government level, at a personal consumer level, consumers being squeezed by low pay deals. We've got low savings ratio in the UK. Chinese economy is still pretty difficult in terms of the direction of that. And of course, in this country, we've got Brexit and how that's all going to pan out. So there are some big market skews as well that have dominated financial conditions and sentiment, and we shouldn't ignore some of those influences on markets, whether it be ETF flows, tech flows, the influence of oil on our own domestic market in terms of its influence. So a lot of risks still out there.
I'm amazed, Mark, you got through that. Yeah. Actually, the list of risks, and you mentioned Brexit at the very last moment.
Yeah.
And you didn't even mention the Trump word either.
No.
Those are obviously two risks, but actually it's more about policy error and in the increase in inflation that's a concern to us. So while the headlines might focus on Brexit and Trump, that's, when I say the least of our concerns, still concerns, but we're worried about other areas.
Sure. Well, this is now the number one popular question that pretty much every one of our introducers that I'm speaking to are asking. What might the trigger point be for a correction in equity bond markets, and are we getting closer to that correction?
I think we certainly are getting closer to some sort of correction. It's now been 14 consecutive months where we've seen the MSCI World Index produce a positive return. That's the longest running stretch in 30 years. Normally you have 3 or 4 months maybe maximum before you have a lost month, but we've had 14 consecutive months, started back in October 2016, where the MSCI World Index has been positive. So yeah, we're getting closer. Difficult to pinpoint what this trigger is going to be, but I think it's more likely to come from bond markets than anywhere else. Certainly a sharper rise in inflation, as I've mentioned, would cause a disruption. We've got incredibly compressed bond yields at the moment. It feels like we're pushing a beach ball. You know, when you've gone into the sea or a swimming pool and taken a beach ball in with you, try to sort of push it down under your body, you keep control of it for a bit, but as soon as you lose control, it rises rapidly out of the water. And that's what it feels like with bond markets at the moment. They're being compressed by central banks and this artificial stimulus. And at some point, things are going to rise, and they're going to rise quite rapidly. I think the trigger points are probably seeing things like the US 10-year Treasury yield going through 2.6%. It nudged there last week, and we've got some headline bond managers, some veteran bond managers, very excited. You probably saw some comments from Bill Gross, for example, commenting about that. And also the 2-year Treasury yield going through 2% is there at the moment. So these are potential trigger points for some action. A couple of triggers that might happen in the first quarter. Clearly we've got Janet Yellen's last FOMC meeting at the end of January. She doesn't produce a statement after that, but the next guard, the next watch of the Fed is probably going to be a bit more hawkish than the current one, so we need to be mindful of that. And the other trigger point, if it doesn't come from Trump or some sort of political thing in the States, could be the Italian elections on the 4th of March and some sort of resurgence in political unrest within Europe. That's the potential trigger.
So leading on from that, Mark, our current defensive positioning, I think, is well established both with clients and with introducers. They've understood why we've been positioned that way. But now, how close are we to potentially allocating additionally into equities?
I think we're a little bit closer than we were, but that's for the reasons we've described about some better economic growth, but it's not everywhere, but there are some opportunities in certain parts of the world where we think there's some better opportunities. Although we think we're going to get a better opportunity than today to actually to access those, and I think it's worth being a little bit more patient. We're only talking about a moderate increase in equities if we do increase risk, but go back to the previous comment about the stretch that we've had in terms of the winning streak in equities over the last 14 consecutive months. That feels uncomfortable, a point to be entering equity sure. markets.
Tom, in terms of those growth opportunities, if we were allocating into equities, what are the thoughts of the investment committee in terms of where those opportunities are? And what's changed in the recent months to bring us to that point?
Well, whenever you make an investment decision, it can be really based on a variety of factors. The markets that we continue to favour are those that offer value. It's as simple as that. We want to buy cheaply. And the two markets that offer best value at the current time are Europe and Japan. Now, that's not to say that they're the only markets that offer some form of value, but I'm just going to talk about both of those for a moment. Mark's already talked about the unwinding of the stimulus, but both in Europe and Japan, they are still printing money, and that's very accommodative for investors. So in both markets, we have that stimulus in place, and because both markets have been depressed for significant periods of time, they, on a price-earnings basis, they offer excellent value. In both Japan and Europe, we've got inflation on the rise. GDP growth is improving, wages are rising, and generally the conditions seem more conducive to further growth. Mark mentioned actually when we looked across the developed economies, it's only the UK where growth is actually slightly struggling, but elsewhere in the world growth and GDP is coming through, which is pleasing to see. So both Europe and Japan look very interesting to us. So when we have that correction, those are the most likely places that will be increasing exposure. At the same time, we're also looking very closely at our exposure to other markets as well. And we're in the process of recognising that our growth positions in some of these markets, which have done us very, very well over the last couple of years, we're starting to actually see a disparity between growth stocks and value stocks. So we've been starting to look at seeing how we can take advantage of that, especially in places like Europe. The funds that we've been using have produced growth returns of about 20% over 2017, and we're potentially looking to take some of those profits. We're currently searching for a more value-orientated fund which offers better value. We actually met with a manager a couple of days ago, and the general theme is they're starting to increase a bit of cyclicality to their portfolios. They're increasing their exposure to the financial sector, the oil sector, and commodity sector, which have done well over the last couple of months, and we think can continue to do.
I think just add to that, I think it's important to stress that there's value and there's value. I mean, there's deep value, distressed value, and that never turns into growth. Then we're talking about introducing some cyclicality into some of the portfolio, and the key sectors that are going to benefit from that are probably financials in a rate rising environment, which it looks as if we're going into. So financials are probably the biggest beneficiary, and things like technology, if we're talking about the States, for example, technology is probably the area that you decrease. So a number of the managers are doing this already, and there are a lot of growth managers out there that are also masquerading as value managers and vice versa. And we want managers to have that flexibility and freedom. But when you've got overt growth that has done well, then you want to sort of recycle into those parts of the market that offer better value. And in the downturn, if there is going to be a sell-off, should be much better protected.
And I think this is really interesting for those listening, because you know, obviously the key reasons for outsourcing investment management is the active approach that someone like ourselves would take around making these type of decisions, which is more difficult for an advisor to monitor on a day-to-day basis. So what we're really saying is that there is a definite move from at the very headline from growth to value. And I think that's something we could come back out to those of you listening and provide you with a little bit of more information on, because we've got some interesting, I think, data to back that up in a visual sense. So we'll do that. Moving on, obviously one of the other sort of hot topics that introducers are asking us about is in relation to inflation, and obviously the rise of inflation has been sort of pretty quick in terms of manifesting in the UK. So what are we or have we done, and what are we doing specifically within client portfolios to combat the effects of inflation? And obviously I'm thinking in particular down at the lower risk profiles where it has a more magnified effect.
Yeah, well, it's been a challenge, certainly at the lower end of the risk spectrum, to find assets that that are capable of beating inflation. And typically the asset class that that delivers that are equities. And when you haven't got much budget for equities, you need to look at other things. So we've been running decent positions in index-linked bonds, for example. We've actually reduced the duration in index-linked bonds because we've been worried about the sensitivity to rising interest rates. So we've battened down the hatches, or more battened down the hatches in our bond positioning. So indexing bonds are a feature. Gold is still very much part of the portfolio. It's been performing exceptionally well recently, and it's come up from about $1,250 an ounce to $1,340 in the space of 3 weeks. So that's been good. Had a bit of a headwind from dollar's weakness, but it's still made a positive return in sterling terms in the past few weeks. So that's been good. I think the other area is really in the alternative space, where what we've been doing is modifying some of the exposure to make sure that we've got funds there that are capable or have target returns which are in excess of inflation. And we had been targeting funds when inflation was very, very low. We had been targeting funds which had a cash plus a very small amount type target, and now we're targeting funds which have got a cash plus a little bit more, but still at the lower end of the spectrum. But that's what we want, is alternative funds that are capable of delivering returns ahead of inflation at the end of the day.
You know, for a long time it was very, well, I say very easy, while inflation was low and interest rates were low, owning a cash plus fund was a perfectly acceptable way to have exposure to an alternative fund. But while inflation is now at 3% in the UK and cash is still earning you next to nothing, we've recognised that and, as Mark said, have taken steps both recently and actually over the autumn to switch out of the perhaps more pedestrian funds into ones that can produce inflation plus returns.
And obviously, that links directly into our alternative exposure. Again, one of the reasons that advisors bring their clients to us is because of our unconstrained multi-asset approach, and not being afraid to use alternatives to quite an extent where we feel it's appropriate for clients. In relation to that alternative piece, Tom, what else is going on in that space that we're doing? Obviously, I'm mindful Mark's comments in relation to gold don't apply to any clients within our platform service that's not available there. So what else is going on in the alternative space to both combat inflation but also to potentially capture additional growth?
Yeah, I mean, within our alternatives weightings, we've got a range of different types of funds are producing different types of returns. And it's really just, as I said, Mark and I said earlier, it's just recognising the fact that we're trying to generate a return that's higher than the rate of inflation. This is meaning that a couple of the funds that have done well for us, so the BlackRock Absolute Return Funds and the BNY Mellon Absolute Return Equity Fund, which were both producing the absolute returns we're after, but they were sub 3% at the point we decided to make this switch. What we're doing is actually increasing our exposure to funds that are producing inflation plus returns, like the old Mutual Global Equity Absolute Return Funds, that would return 6.5%, and the Henderson UK Absolute Return Equity Fund, which produced 3.5%. We're also increasing our exposure to our fund of structured products. Many of the listeners will know that we already hold the Atlantic House Fund, Defined Returns Fund, which has produced double-digit returns over 2017. We've more recently been looking to introduce a new fund of structured products from a firm called 4M Capital. We've done a lot of due diligence on the firm and on the fund. Although it's a relatively new fund, it's not dissimilar to the Atlantic House one. We're hopeful that this sort of slight increase, dare I say, in risk within our alternative sector will provide the inflation-adjusted returns that we're after.
Super. Okay. Here's an easy, straightforward question for you both. The market correction tomorrow, setback that we've been talking about earlier on, what do you do the next day in client portfolios?
First things first, we have an investment committee.
Excellent.
An extraordinary investment committee, which we can call at any time. We've been very cognizant of the fact that when corrections happen, they do so quite quickly, and therefore you have to act very quickly. So the first thing to do, as I said, is to call the investment committee and to make decisions. In fact, we've already been discussing what actions we might take, and in preparation for this, we continue to hold a little bit of cash in the portfolio. This is a very active decision on our behalf to provide that flexibility to gain access into markets as quickly as possible. In terms of other steps that might occur, obviously it depends on what has caused the correction. It depends on whether immediate action is needed. But all of our funds are readily realizable. They can be disposed of very, very quickly, and reinvestments can be made. One of the easiest ways of doing this would be to sell down our physical gold exposure, where we've got 6% allocation, other than on platforms, that we can reallocate very quickly to equity markets. In fact, we've also been letting, while we've been at the lower end of our equity range for each strategy, we've been happy to let those drift slightly higher as markets have risen. So actually, equity weightings are higher than the minimum level that you may have seen in our risk guide. So we can very quickly reallocate 10% from cash and from gold. And as I said, we can sell down probably short-dated fixed interest funds for very sort of quick liquidity and reallocate pretty much within 24, 48 hours.
Yeah, I think just to add on to that, Tom made a very good point here. We're already thinking about the areas that we want to invest in. You know, we've got a very clear picture of the types of parts of the world or sectors that we want to allocate to. Of course, when you do get a setback, you have to re-examine the reasons why that setback has occurred. And although we can sit here today thinking that we know what the likely trigger points are going to be, and more likely, as I say, coming from bond markets, it might not be that, and we have to reassess. And if there's a large ballistic missile coming over the, from somewhere nasty, then clearly that changes it differently.
So having already mentioned that two markets were interested in the Japan and Europe, as Mark said, if North Korea launched a missile towards Japan, yeah. Well, that may not be a sensible investment. And likewise in Europe, one of the other tripwires Mark mentioned earlier was the Italian election in early March. It may not be the right time to invest into Europe. So we have to. That's why we have to call an investment committee to reassess these things.
Thanks. So I'm going to link these next two questions together, actually. I think they're around the more, I suppose, practical or the practicalities of when you have a client who may potentially be looking to invest at the moment. I think as I've, in the conversations I've had with many of you, what I think Bordier offer is a real option in your kit bag for someone who's positioned ahead of, I guess, the flood. And given where market values are at the moment, these two questions are linked, which is, if you have cash to invest right now, what should you do? And the second part of that is given where current market valuations are, can you accommodate phasing investments for clients and advisors, and is it a good idea? Tom?
The rather flippant answer is to say give your money to Bordier UK to manage. And that's on the basis that, you know, we're defensively cautiously positioned. We've done everything we can in every asset class to ensure we're in the right types of funds that if a correction does occur, whether it's in bond or equity markets, that our portfolios will hold up quite well. But at the same time, if we're wrong and markets do continue to rise, the funds we're using are still providing excellent returns, and our performance track record on a risk-adjusted basis continues to be excellent. So, you know, we'd hope that all of your clients would be investing on a minimum medium-term time horizon. And on a five-year view, our strategies, I think, can provide both the protection but also the long-term growth as well. So that's the flippant answer. I'll let Mark give his view on it in a moment. In terms of phasing, yes, we can accommodate that if required, but our preference would be to say to our clients and their advisors, our strategies are designed to produce risk-adjusted returns, and therefore why not invest fully on day one? But if the client is particularly nervous, then certainly we can agree a policy of phasing the monies in over an agreed time period.
Mark, what's your view?
Well, our normal preference is to get invested. You know, we're taking the strain, really, for advisors and clients in terms of making those decisions. And as Tom says, it is typically a longer-term policy that is being, you know, medium to long-term policy that is being put in place, not only for us, but also for clients. And, we're taking the active decisions to effectively phase that money in by either being defensive or risk fully on. And at the moment, we're down at the cautious end, but you know, as we've been discussing, we're prepared to modify that. And I think that, you know, from a client's perspective, from an advisor's perspective, that's exactly what we want.
Yeah. I mean, certainly if you took a client who was in our balanced strategy, which can have equities of 40 to 60%, you could argue that by being at 40% at the current time, you are, as Mark said, sort of phasing that in.
Yes.
I often, if I'm asked to phase money in, we'll do it in three tranches, sometimes four. So if your equity portion can be go up to 60% and you initially start at 40, you've pretty much done the first two phases.
So I think our message there is perfectly achievable. There are some risks for all parties concerned in that conversation, but that's exactly what it is. It's a conversation individually, either with ourselves and you, or alongside the client to agree exactly what the strategy is, and obviously most importantly we document that right at the start. Mark, obviously many of our introducers will be coming into January, and it will be coming up to usual review periods for clients, a natural reflection point in terms of 2017. How would you assess the performance of Bordier strategies in 2017? What messages would you give to advisors?
Well, I think we've done a good job. I mean, we've produced positive returns across the range of our strategies. In the case of the very low end of the spectrum, we've delivered the 15th consecutive year of positive performance. I don't think many firms have got that at the defensive end. You know, it went through the financial crisis with a small positive return, that defensive strategy. Our cautious strategy has produced the results that we're trying to achieve, i.e. preserving wealth in real terms. It produced a performance in line with inflation. And at the higher end of the risk spectrum, we've got returns there of high single digits or even into double digits. So So there's a broad progression of returns across our strategies. Yes, we may not have produced the level of returns that some of our competitors have produced, but I think we have positioned ourselves with some caution, which we think is right, given that we've got a very uncertain world there, and we think we're very well prepared. You know, we produce decent returns, and it's that protection of the hard-fought gains that we've generated over the last few years since the financial crisis that is much more important to us than squeezing out the last drop of return from what are extended financial assets, not just equity markets, bonds too. So, as I say, producing decent returns, and this is about looking forward, not looking backwards. And there are far too many market participants that are still looking backwards at what returns, you know, chasing mandates that have produced the very best returns. We see this within the funds we choose. You know, there's still a lot of allocation to funds out there that have been the very best performers last year. And what you need to be looking at right now is actually the things that didn't do quite so well, but are positioned for the future. And that's the way we feel that we are.
Great. Final couple of sort of thoughts from both of you. What can Bordier clients expect from their portfolios Q1 2018 and then 2018 as a whole?
This is where we have to get our crystal ball out.
Yep. David. Now you're coloured for the mask.
I think the one thing that's almost guaranteed this year is that investors will see a lot more volatility. There's a lot of complacency in markets at the moment. The VIX index, which is essentially the cost of insuring yourself against a market fall in the US, is at all-time low levels. There's a high level of complacency. As Mark mentioned right at the start, FOMO, this fear of missing out, is forcing investors into markets. Markets have seen an uninterrupted rise. We haven't seen a significant correction for the longest period, I think, in history. So I think we're going to see volatility. The problem is we don't know necessarily what's going to cause it or when it's going to happen. So 2018 as a whole will be an interesting year. It's very, very difficult to know where we're going to finish the year. I can definitely say the market will be significantly lower at some point, but then may stage a recovery. It is one of those years that's very difficult to call, but we think our cautious positioning is the right way to go.
I think what you can expect, though, in 2018 from us is that you know, if we do get that that volatility that Tom's just mentioned, I think you will see much more stability in the portfolios that your clients have from us than some of our competitors who haven't either taken any action or don't have the ability to take action. And I think through our fundamental positioning and also the active management that that we definitely deploy, I think we should be able to come through 2018 in a better position than many of our peers.
One final question from me. We sometimes hear when we're talking out to our introducers on a day-to-day basis, I like you because you're a cautious manager. What would you say to that?
No, I think we can manage money and do manage money for all market conditions, and that's borne out by the results that we've achieved at the upper end of the strategy. We're active, and yes, just because we're cautious now doesn't mean we'll always be cautious. You know, for several years after the financial crisis, we had equity risk on at the top end of the ranges for several years and did very well out of that. And yes, we've retreated into a more cautious position, but this is about being active, and we're not afraid to do that. So no, we can manage money at both ends of the spectrum, and have got the results to prove that.
Mark, thank you. Tom, thank you. And I think the messages were fairly clear. You'll see on our investment commentary, the headline is ready and waiting. And there's very much a watching brief in terms of market levels and potential action to put some risk back on the table when and if we feel it's appropriate. And as Mark said there, you know, what you'll get from Bordier is active management either to participate or protect as we feel appropriate for clients. Obviously, many of you will know that we offer a number of different propositions. We've tried to keep the investment commentary as applicable to all of those propositions as possible, but you'll recognise that we have clients with you that are all sometimes with us just on platform, in our model portfolio services, in our bespoke service, and also in our risk-targeted services. So if there's any particular questions that you want answered in the context of individual services, please email me separately. And likewise, if there's any questions you feel that weren't covered, then just drop me a line. As I said, we're about to distribute full investment commentary from the two investment committee meetings of December and January, along with the latest fact sheet. So you'll get those in your inbox very, very shortly. There'll also be an opportunity to listen to this recording again, and you may want to pass that on to your colleagues and encourage them to listen to it if they're either thinking about looking at Bordier or have clients with Bordier and they weren't able to make it. And other than that, I have nothing else to say other than say have a great Wednesday. And if, like me, you're in dry January, hang tough.
Have a good day, everyone. Thanks for listening. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to this recording of the Bordier Live Q4 2017 Investment Update Call, which took place on Wednesday the 17th of January 2018. We ask you to spend a moment of your time to listen to the following regulatory wording. This recording is issued and approved by Bordier & Cie UK PLC, which is a company incorporated in England. Registered address, 23 King Street, St James, London, SW1Y6QY. Bordier & Cie UK PLC is authorised and regulated by the Financial Conduct Authority. This recording is not intended as an offer to acquire or dispose of any security or interest in any security. Whilst every effort has been made to ensure that the information contained in this recording is correct, the directors of Bordier and Cie UK PLC can take no responsibility for any action taken or not taken as a result of the matters discussed.